Welcome back to the Look and Sound of Leadership, an ongoing series of executive coaching tips designed to help you be perceived in the workplace the way you want to be perceived. I'm Tom Henschel, your executive coach, and today we're talking about coaching under attack. Charlotte looked at me squarely and said, "You're not a business coach." Was there a challenge in her statement? I wasn't sure. I had done a lot of homework leading up to this meeting with Charlotte. Charlotte had been installed as the president at a consumer goods company almost a year ago. Up until she arrived, this consumer goods company had been a great client of mine. I'd been coaching senior leaders and their teams there for more than 6 years. And then suddenly Charlotte arrived, and my spigot got turned off. I never knew why. My loyal contacts in the company saw ripples just like that in many of Charlotte's actions. People said she was tough. They were hoping she was fair. They weren't sure. Now, out of the blue, Charlotte's office sent me an invitation to meet with her. Not knowing the agenda, I prepared a report for her. I showed my history of work with the company. My company contacts polished the report for me, and they gave me coaching. They said, "Be prepared to be grilled." Well, I felt completely prepared. So I met this opening challenge from Charlotte, was I not a business coach, with warm agreement. "Oh, absolutely, Charlotte. I'm a professional coach. I'm not a business coach." "To you, they're different?" Whether it was her intention or not, Charlotte sounded combative. I said, "I think business coaches are subject matter experts. You know, they're deep about some function or some sector. But professional coaches like me, we work across all sectors and all functions because everyone needs professional development." "Really," she said, "everyone? You believe everyone needs professional development?" This felt like such a softball question. I asked, "Don't you?" "I surround myself with smart people," she said. "I don't want them to have a lot of development needs." "Well, and I hope they don't," I said. "Even so, the needs are there. They may not be derailers, but I'll bet you could name a few things you'd like each of your people to do differently." "That I could," she said. "So, they have needs. It doesn't mean they need coaching. Some people never do. But sometimes someone's too valuable to lose, but she'll never reach her potential unless she learns how to lead a team or learns to handle herself better in front of the executive committee. That's where my kind of coaching can help." "Her boss should be able to coach her," she said with a jerk of her chin. "I want my leaders to coach and develop their people themselves." "And sometimes they can," I said. This was feeling less like a conversation than an interrogation. I consciously kept my tone light and non-defensive. "You know, I've been talking with leaders a lot the last few years about coaching their people. Here's what I picture. There's someone at your level. You're already working long days. You have little or no time to reflect. And you can sustain it, but, you know, your capacity is pretty much at the full line. And then your boss says, 'Oh, and we're going to tie your bonus to how well you coach your people, so do a lot of coaching this year.'" She gave the tiniest snort. It might have indicated a laugh. It might have indicated recognition or derision. I went on, "The leaders I talk with, first of all, they don't have the time to give coaching the attention it requires in order to get results. And second, they often just really, they don't know how to coach. It's not their natural strength. So they hire you instead." I made light with a smile and said, "Exactly." She did not smile back. I went on, "That's where I become the subject matter expert. That sort of professional development, that's my meat and potatoes. So that's the goal of your kind of coaching, professional development." She did not sound enthusiastic. I said, "The general goal for executive coaching is to help you get past whatever barriers are blocking your particular path." I knew the report I had generated for her was on the table in front of her. Touching it, she said, 75% of the people you've coached here have gotten promoted. I see Richard was one of those. Richard reported directly to Charlotte. I'd coached Richard 4 years ago, long before Charlotte. Charlotte went on, what sort of barrier was blocking Richard's path? In a convenient coincidence, Richard was one of the people I had talked with when I was preparing for this meeting with Charlotte. I had expressly told Richard what I'd like to say if his name came up. He was fine with my suggestion, so I felt comfortable saying to Charlotte, when I met Richard, the feedback about him was that he was brilliant, everyone agreed he would be a senior leader one day, but that he had sharp elbows, and if he didn't learn how to play nice in the sandbox, he wasn't going to get to be with the big kids. And that's what he and I worked on. His boss couldn't have done that? Her bias was clear. Not the way I can, I said. When I show up, I have nothing else to talk about. It's like a timeout from business as usual. I am only there to focus on that one thing. And I listen in ways most bosses don't. Which is what? Well, in two ways. First, I believe people have a deep desire to tell their stories and be heard. When I show up committed to listening, they talk in a way that's often just new to them. It's why years later, you know, when people see me, they light up and they give me big hugs. Most people just don't get listened to in that way. And when they do, they feel they've been given a gift. I waited a second. She was silent, so I went on. Second, I listen without an agenda. You know, I'm not the boss. I'm not from HR. I'm not your husband. I'm not your wife. I don't have any skin in the game except to help you achieve success, however you define that. She said, but you must have an agenda. The company's paying you. You have to support their goals. Oh, absolutely, I said. Good coaching can't happen without clear goals. And the organization's goals are often what's driving the coaching. So you do have an agenda, she said, as if scoring a point. Well, I want the coaching to succeed. Yeah, I suppose that's an agenda. But look, I know that I can't make anyone achieve their goals. If they're not ready to learn, I won't be able to teach them. But since that's the only reason I'm there, I'm going to use every tool I have, and I have a lot of tools. Tools, she said. I assumed it was a question, so I said, mental models, analogies, stories, tactics. If people like to read, I'll send them books. If people like to reflect, I'll give them homework. Give me an example of a mental model. Well, here's one I use in almost every coaching engagement. In order to be an effective executive, you have to do two things every day. You have to hit your goals, and you have to build and maintain positive relationships. That's a mental model. I used that with Richard. Richard was really high in hitting goals, and not nearly as high in building and maintaining relationships. We talked a lot about that. And now he's a different person. She sounded very skeptical. I hope not, I said, trying to sound light. He learned new skills, and he's displaying new behaviors. But no, his personality didn't change. Coaching can't change anyone's personality. I said, once people get coached, they often do show up differently. Lots of my clients tell me the person who's most excited about their coaching is their spouse. There was no hint of a smile. She asked, isn't this just corporate therapy? I kept reminding myself, stay calm, be conversational. I'm not a psychologist, Charlotte. The work I do with people isn't psychological. Richard and I didn't delve into why he had sharp elbows. We just worked on his behavior. Well, the two connect, surely, she said. I wouldn't have sharp elbows if there wasn't something going on psychologically. Did she know she just spoke in the first person? I said, well, I'm with you. Usually there is something going on psychologically. But, listen, I might help you think differently about an issue, but I am not going to help you develop psychologically. I mean, heck, we don't have time. We usually only have 6 months. Well, how do you teach someone to lose their sharp elbows? One way is feedback. Richard's feedback report was crystal clear what people liked and what they didn't. People's verbatim comments made a big impression on him. He didn't like that he was having a negative impact on people. The gap between intention and impact, she said. Yeah, I talk about that with people all the time. So do I, she said. People hear the feedback, but they're slow to change. Often, I agreed. And then she spoke at length about giving people feedback, but not seeing any change in the behavior. After one example that seemed to particularly frustrate her, she fixed her stare at me and said, "If someone has been hearing the feedback from people at work and people at home, you would think they'd change." "Wouldn't you?" I agreed. "But they don't." And then, skeptically, she said, "But you're saying with coaching they do." "Well, that's my experience. Many do." "Why?" "Three reasons. First, the population. You know, in the bad old days, coaching was given to poor performers, so the results were poor. But now coaching's an investment for high performers, so the population is better, the results are too. Second, getting coached. It's like going to the gym on a schedule with a trainer. If you work with someone knowledgeable and you work out regularly, you're gonna get better. And number three, importance. Usually by the time I show up, the person has missed an opportunity or two or three, and she doesn't want to miss another. And executive opportunities can be rare, she said. Yeah, at your level, very rare. Plus, at the executive level, everyone is smart, right? Everyone's expert. Everyone works hard. So the skills you teach are even more important. Well, I think they can be a differentiator, I said. Well, what about you? If you had two candidates who were equally skilled, would you choose the one who is pretty balanced with tasks and relationships? You think the relationship piece is teachable, she said, not answering my question. Oh, absolutely. Not everyone's ready to learn it, but are relationships teachable? Yes, sure. She said, in that task and relationship mental model, I've got the first part. I had no idea where she was headed. I waited. She looked at me and said, that second part, that's what I need, which is why I'd like you to be my coach. The fact that I said, that would be my pleasure, without showing my enormous surprise, without even a blink, was, I think, one of my finest displays of the look and sound of leadership. This episode first aired in February 2016. It's exactly 4 years later. The lesson I hear now in this episode is so different than what it was for me then. When I first wrote this episode, I was really focused on the coaching. People wanted to know, what did coaching look like? They wanted to know, how could they pitch it to their boss? They wanted to know, how could they overcome objections? Well, you know what? This episode, it was written to explain coaching and to give people a way to think about responding when coaching gets challenged. And I think the episode does really well in that way. I think it explains coaching really well. And the lesson that stands out to me now is completely different. What impresses me now is how good I was at coaching myself in the moment with someone like Charlotte. I remember this whole incident. You have to remember, I had so much possible baggage about Charlotte. I had lost my earnings from her company because of her. And then to be in dialogue with someone who's just naturally combative. Listen, there was a time in my life when I would have been completely ineffective with someone who had that much blunt force. But I remember leaving that meeting with Charlotte, and I remember thinking two things to myself. First, I was not 100% certain what I had actually said. But the second thing that I knew was I knew that I had done well. That is so important. More on that in a second. First, this month's gratitude. One of my daughters is building a life in Bali. I'm starting this month's gratitude with much gratitude for being able to go and visit her and her boyfriend and to share a bit of their life and have a fantastic time. Much gratitude. And then get this, from a different country. A month or so back, I said, hey, let's double the number of posted reviews in iTunes in every country in the world before the end of 2020, right? Well, here it is. It is February, and big gratitude to Reluchi from Denmark. Reluchi from Denmark posted a review, and with that single review, doubled all the reviews in Denmark. So, yay, thank you very much. Way to go. Denmark, big check. And Reluchi, thanks so much. Gratitude also from the United Kingdom. Martin from St. Helens and B. Chaker from the U.S. Larry 867-5309. Abdul Aziz, Venice John, Isabel from California, Dutch Blonde, Annalise 111. Thank you all. Thank you for taking the time and posting a review from your country in the iTunes store. It makes a huge difference for a podcast like this. Thank you so much. And thank you, too, for the very kind words that you write. I am grateful. A final thanks this month, folks who subscribe to the HTML version. Listen, however this stuff adds value, help yourself. Okay, I was talking about leaving that meeting with Charlotte and knowing I had done well. Here's how I knew. Because I was coaching myself so heavily in real time with her, I told myself to slow down, and I did. And I told myself, just listen, and I did. And I reminded myself that all my history of feelings was irrelevant, and I let it go, and I never got defensive. That's amazing with a woman like that. I never got defensive. I did well because my self-coaching worked. My self-coaching worked because I did a lot of prep work. Well, I've said this before. I grew up in the discipline of the professional theater where rehearsal was your work. That's what you did. I know the mastery that comes with rehearsal. My self-coaching worked because I was ready. I was well rehearsed. What does that mean? I had talked to people like Richard in the company more than one, and often more than once. I'd prepared that report. I'd been thinking deeply about what I wanted to say to this woman. If you are going into a situation where you think the stakes might be high, you can't rehearse enough. Find partners. Think it through. Write it out. Reflect on it. Keep rehearsing. I want to end with this thought. The day that you find yourself in a situation that feels like a confrontation with an adversary, I want you to see if you can ask, how much of that are you contributing to? Where did that idea of adversary come from? Look, there are a million reasons why I could have made Charlotte my adversary. I didn't, and the outcome was better for it. And it was hard to do. I had to do it with real consciousness and intention. This is what I'm asking you. How many stories are you making up? Where does that feeling of adversarial come from? Is there really an attack here? If you love this rabbit hole like I do, there are a slew of episodes that you might listen to. Oh my goodness, so many. You might just use the filters, developing new behaviors, personal growth and self-development, self-talk. 5 specific episodes you might listen to, coaching versus therapy, creating new behaviors, how behaviors change, high stakes meetings. That's actually the one that talks about preparing for the meeting with Charlotte. And then finally, readiness in coaching. All those episodes and those filters in the archive are on the Essential Communications website, essentialcom.com. It's essentialcom with 2 M's.com. Click the podcast button. Okay, that's it for me. Until next time, I'm Tom Henschel. Thanks so much for listening.